What is that thing? The first car I owned as a Peace Corps volunteer in Africa was a Volkswagen thing that looked rugged enough to climb Aunt Fanny's pantry in Yosemite with one tire tied behind its back. However, instead of being rugged, it simply focused on the illusion of looking rugged. It had few amenities, a lousy suspension, and no front grille. But I loved it, even though its nickname was the Rolling Death. I loved it, even though it was so ugly that years later it was voted number 6 of the 50 ugliest cars in the past half century. Officially, the thing was called the Volkswagen Type 181 and was known in Germany as the Kurierwagen. Volkswagen had developed it as a rugged off-road vehicle for the German military in the 1960s and 1970s. It looked like the kind of war machine that Klingons would have built. The 1990s Klingons like Worf, not the simpy, wimpy 1960s pseudo-Klingons that looked like humans with a skin rash. In addition to the military versions, however, Volkswagen also sold commercial versions of the Type 181. In England, it was known as the Trekker, and in the United States, it was called the Thing. My first encounter with the Thing began shortly after I arrived in the Gambia, working as the resident ethnomusicologist to the Cultural Archives of the Republic of the Gambia, West Africa. My title was almost as big as my office. Between collecting for the archives and conducting my own research, I needed a vehicle to get around the country. It was love at first sight when I saw that 1969 burnt orange thing parked in front of the Peace Corps office. It was owned by a guy from Catholic Relief Services who was leaving the country and had heard I was looking for a car. I bought it that morning for about $900. My thing was a convertible that came with a top that disappeared 2 days after I bought it. My top had been borrowed by a local entrepreneur. For your information, the word entrepreneur comes from the French word meaning to borrow my roof like a thief in the night with no intention of returning it. A couple of weeks after I bought the car, I learned that Alex Haley of Roots fame had visited the Gambia the year before. During that time, he traveled to Jufure, the village near which Kunta Kinte had apparently been abducted so long ago. You know Kunta Kinte? Roots and LeVar Burton before he was Geordi LaForge on Star Trek The Next Generation? In a newspaper interview I read, Haley recounted his arduous journey to Jufure. His trip had involved crossing the Gambia River to the north bank in a fragile pirogue. For the point of clarity, a pirogue is not a pierogi. A pirogue is a small dugout canoe. A pierogi is a meat dumpling. The two have something in common, though. Neither floats very well. It was a dangerous trip by Haley's account, and only the most devoted researcher would have undertaken it. Certainly, it must have been terrifying to cross a river that a century earlier was filled with crocodiles and hippos. There were still crocodiles in the Gambia, but you'd find them at Kachikale Crocodile Pool in the tourist-oriented town of Bakau. Tourists, the sick, and barren women made pilgrimages there to cuddle with one of the sacred 7-foot crocodiles who live in the sacred healing waters of the sacred pool adjacent to the sacred cash register. Given my interest in the cultural and musical connections between the Gambia and America, I needed to go to Jufure to interview historians and musicians and find out what they knew about Kunta Kinte, who was apparently making a drum when he was captured. Fortunately for me, I wouldn't have to take a pirogue. I could also get to Jufure via ferry from Banjul to Bara, followed by a 90-minute drive along some dirt paths. Apparently, Alex Haley hadn't noticed the ferry. Early one morning, I loaded up my thing with my Minolta camera equipment, Nakamichi battery-operated portable tape recorder, tapes, some food and water, and a variety of presents to give to the elders, including 2 50-kilogram sacks of rice. The ferry ride lasted about 90 minutes, including drifting for a while after the ferry's engines cut out. Shortly after driving off the ferry, I found myself ambling along a back road off another back road. The thing handled exquisitely at 12 miles an hour, Without a top, I could look out and enjoy the dramatic panoramic view of baobab trees with vultures in them, although I didn't like the way they were looking at me, like they knew something I didn't. I had been driving about 45 minutes when I saw a smoke column in the distance. I stopped, turned off my thing, and grabbed my binoculars to get a better view. It was soon clear that it was a large grass fire, and it was blowing in my direction. It was also crystal clear that it was blowing hundreds of frightened animals in my direction. Leading the charge was a shitload of baboons, which have really, really large canine teeth. I tossed the binoculars onto the passenger seat and tried to start up the car. But my thing had done one of its things. It refused to start up. It didn't take me long to flood the carburetor. I sat there mesmerized as the terrified primates approached. I began to imagine the letter that would arrive back in the United States, confirming how my body was consumed by a gang of baboons. My nephews and nieces would be so proud that Uncle Mike had died in such an unusual and dramatic way, death by African baboon. However, my fate was worse, way, way worse. As the baboon teeth were almost upon me, I could hear their familiar cry, which sounds a great deal like wahoo. I laid down in the passenger seat and started yelling, wahoo, wahoo, hoping they might think I was one of them. Wahoo! 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 Did I mention that my thing was a convertible with no top? Did I? Like most primates, baboons tend to lighten their body weight when fleeing from something frightening, and before I could say baboon pee and poop, they had poured over me and around me and on top of my thing. My sunglasses were the first to be hit by something really foul, and soon I was wishing I had worn sunglasses over my nose and mouth and neck and hair, forehead. As they scattered into the savannah, I laid there on the passenger seat, gagging and wondering if death by canine might have been preferable. There would be no letters to my nephews and nieces about this particular incident. I sat up, wiped off my sunglasses, and wanted to assess the damage, but there wasn't time to do that because the grass fire was continuing my way. In a moment of what must have been German automotive self-preservation, my thing started right up and I began to hurry back down the road. When I was out of immediate danger, I pulled over to the side of the road, and then I heard it. Almost immediately, I felt the first drop. It was mid-August and the rainy season had begun. Although it doesn't rain most of the year in the Gambia, I should point out that the average rainfall during August is over 15 inches, with 10 more inches in September. It rains a lot, so much so that when you ask Gambians how old they are, you ask them how many rains they've lived through. You know that scene in The Shawshank Redemption when Morgan Freeman describes how Tim Robbins had escaped by crawling to freedom through 500 yards of shit-smelling foulness? And then Tim Robbins celebrates by lifting his head into the downpour that washes off the shit-smelling foulness on his body. Remember? That was me as the rain fell on me and my thing that day in the Gambia. I sat there for 20 minutes, face up, while the rains washed over me. All that was missing was Thomas Newman's fabulous soundtrack, emphasizing how noble and brave I had been. When the rain subsided, I started the thing again, and I drove slowly back to the ferry. Driver's side door open, dribbling a trail of dark brown and yellow rainwater behind me. I got rid of my thing a few weeks after I got back to Banjul. I had cleaned it thoroughly with soap and bleach, but I couldn't bleach away the memory. And every time it rained even a little, it seemed to emit a subtle shit-smelling foulness. I traded it to a local entrepreneur for a 1966 Renault Dauphine, which was much smaller, but it had a roof. It had no illusions of being anything special, it just worked. I later learned that the 1966 Renault Dauphine was voted number 9 of the ugliest cars in the past half century, but at least I was finally through with the sorry saga of my thing, until... About 2 weeks after I sold it, I saw my thing again. I was having a beer and a meat pie at a cafe near the Central Taxi car park in Banjul. The September rains were coming down in their torrential glory, and there was my thing all shiny and sparkly, and it was doing very well in the rain because, well, now it had a roof. And not just any roof, but my roof. The one that had been entrepreneured off my thing, which, by the way, was the only thing in the country. That's how I knew it was my roof. "Sachka!" I yelled at the driver. I called him a thief in Wolof. The driver took one look at me, panicked, and then ran to the thing, got in, and pulled away. I jumped up from my table and yelled at him again as he drove out of the car park. "Sachka! Sachka!" I repeated, even louder. But I don't think he heard me yell it the second time. The rain beating down on my convertible top probably blocked the sound of my voice. I sat down to finish my beer and hoped that my roof also helped enclose and amplify the shit-smelling foulness of what had once been my pride and joy.